Please be advised that this episode discusses depression, social anxieties, and suicide. If you or a loved one are struggling with your mental health, don't hesitate to contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or the Samaritans. Thank you.
Good morning and good evening, everyone. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sam, and we are your hosts for this installment of Coffee and Conversations.
Welcome. Coffee and Conversations is a monthly interactive sit-down event hosted by Seasoft. Every month, we'll feature honorary guests and experts from a diverse range of industries and fields to lightly discuss topical themes important to the life sciences and language services industry. So sit down and relax and pour yourself a coffee and enjoy. This month, we are joined by our special guest, Dr. Nelson M. Handel from Clinicom, to discuss the importance of mental health awareness.
Mental health issues are truly global in nature. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, 1 in 10 people around the world suffered from mental health disorders. In the current COVID-19 crisis, the number of people, particularly young people, living with a mental health illness is rapidly increasing worldwide. To give those suffering from mental illness the help that they need, delivering an accurate diagnosis quickly is vital.
That's so true, Sam. As it is such a global issue with so many people impacted, it is so important that we all learn how to help a loved one in need. Okay, so now let's introduce today's guests, Dr. Handel and Ms. Shuni Yi.
Dr. Nelson M. Handel is the founder and president of Clinicom, clinical faculty at the Alabama College of Osteopathic Medicine in Dothan, Alabama, a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association, and is a diplomate of the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology. For the past 20 years, Dr. Nelson M. Handel has been the founder, chairman, and medical director for Dothan Behavioral Medicine Clinic, a large and modern mental health clinic in Alabama. He is also the founder and medical director of Harmonex Neuroscience Research, where he participated in clinical research as a primary investigator in over 80 clinical trials for the past 14 years. Dr. Handel has won numerous awards, including the Heroes in the Fight Award, given by the Mental Health America, and Excellence in Public Mental Health Award, given by the National Alliance on Mental Illness. In addition, Dr. Handel has been recognized as one of America's top psychiatrists by the Consumers Research Council of America. Welcome, Dr. Handel. We're glad you can join us today.
Ms. Shuni Yi is the president and CEO of Seasoft International and Seasoft Health Sciences, which provides end-to-end medical translation services for all phases of the product lifecycle, market access consulting, medical writing, and CTD, ECTD submissions with the FDA, EMA, and the NMPA. Shuni is passionate about education and has contributed to the Michelle Obama's Let Girls Learn initiative, the Hopkins Nanjing Center for Chinese and American Studies, and the Dexter Southfield School. Additionally, Ms. Yi serves as the co-chair for the Joslin Diabetes Center's A Taste of Ginger 2021 committee, supporting the Asian American Diabetes Initiative, or the AADI. Welcome, Shuni. Thank you for joining us. Shuni and Dr. Handel, the floor is all yours.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Bridget and Sam, for a nice introduction. Good morning, Dr. Handel.
Hi, good morning.
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today. Before we get started, for those who may not know, Clinicom is a transformational digital technology using adaptive machine learning algorithm to offer online assessment over 55 mental health conditions. It customizes questionnaires for target mental health assessment to provide physicians with precise information, pricing the patient, eliminating misdiagnosis. So Dr. Handel, do you mind sharing what was your vision behind Clinicom and what Clinicom has accomplished so far? And what do you see more opportunity ahead of us?
Thank you. First of all, thank you for inviting me to participate in this podcast. Thank you to Sam and Bridget, and thank you to you, Shuni. It's been a real pleasure to meet you. So what prompted me to think about Clinicom 14, 15 years ago was the fact that in psychiatry, we need a lot of information, and the information needs to come from the patient. You know, we don't have x-rays or lab work. We didn't. And now there's a little bit of technology that we can use, like pharmacogenetics and things like that. But at the end of the day, the important thing is to get as much information from the patient as you can. So over the years, you know, we have been limited in terms of time, and the expectations of time to assess patients, and the expectations are that the patients need to get to the psychiatry to get a medicine as quick as possible and refer them to a therapy, the paradigm that most doctors use. And I became really concerned. This is not what we want to do, because we want to learn as much as possible from these patients. We want to know, you know, their upbringing, their childhood issues, trauma issues. We want to know if they were prenatally exposed to any factor that may be afflicting their growth. We want to know if, education, what does the education look like for them? It can be a huge stressor for some patients. And then we want to know their family history. We want to know their job history. You know, not having a job is a big deal, yeah. You know. So if, for instance, you ask a patient, okay, what's the reason you're coming here? Oh, you know, it's because I'm depressed. There are 9 questions for depression. If they have 5 out of 9 questions for 2 weeks, and those are impacting their life, you give them a medicine and that's it. And it cannot be like that. You know, we were before, when I trained, you know, we were trained to assess the patients for several hours. But then if you assess patients for many, many hours, maybe you don't come to a conclusion and you don't offer a solution, you know, as they expect. Plus, the insurance companies will not pay you to assess patients for hours and hours and hours and not decide what are you going to do. So I thought about Clinicom as a solution for that. And back then, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was impossible to do Clinicom the way it's now. But over time, you know, it became what it is now. We had a lot of challenges. I thought this is easy, you know. That one thing is to just digitize a form, an inert form with questions. And the other thing is to make questions that are intelligent, you know, that go from here to here based on the answer. And the other huge challenge is, okay, you want the patient to sit down maybe one time and see if you can elicit as many conditions as the patient may have, instead of just doing one questionnaire for depression or one questionnaire for anxiety. So that has been the challenge. You know, you have to have all the questions, but you have to be mindful about the time. So these questions need to be answered within a very reasonable time.
Yeah, so Dr. Hande, I remember you told me, you know, better treatment from better data. So how, we all know how difficult to ask questions, ask them smartly, you know, when seeing a new patient. And can you describe how Clinicom enable objective data collection, and how your machine learning algorithm could customize those questionnaire for target assessment, for both the new assessment and follow-up assessment? And let me ask Sam or Bridget and to bring up we have some screens to show how the Clinicom report looks like. And Dr. Hande, if you don't mind to kind of share your perspective, how the AI, you know, could become a game changer in mental health diagnosis and wellness, saving lives.
Right. So, Clinicom has a feature that is the game changer, basically, because once the conditions are suggested based on the answers of the patients, the clinician can look at the possible conditions, you know, like you see on the right side, and then accept, reject, rule out, or deny the condition. So based on the answers that clinicians give, then the machine learning process can start. You follow me? So yeah. This is a patented technology where we learn based on the physicians basically accepting or rejecting the condition. On the other hand, if a patient, let's say, has a very close possibility of a diagnosis, but it does not meet criteria for that diagnosis, then we can talk to the patient and see if the answers were consistent with the diagnosis or not. For instance, if you need six positive answers and they have five, but they show that it's impacting them, we can modify the question in a certain way so that patients may have an easier time in terms of answering. All the questions were rated by who teach eighth grade level. So the question quality and then the quality of the clinicians responding to accepting or not these diagnoses is the key for everything. Over time, we have had the opportunity to use Clinicom for so many years in sort of pilot programs, let's say. We had like 40 pilot programs, and they would give us feedback about what was not working right or what questions didn't work right. And it is extremely difficult to have these algorithms work. We have developed our own algorithm builder, okay? So you need a platform where you put the questions on, and the questions need to have an algorithm guide. So because it was so difficult to use other algorithm builders, the first one we used was out of Germany, but with time we developed our own. That is absolutely the key, because our algorithm builder, you can visualize where the questions are going, how the questions will be answered. We have a meeting once a week where we we look at our algorithms, if anything is not working right, and we have to discuss, you know, how to fix a question or a condition. So it's a very intensive work, because one thing is that the technology, the AI, and then the other is the clinical part. And so the fact that we develop Clinicom in a clinical setting and a research setting is extremely important.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Handel. So just to follow on these questions, how technology, you know, like you said, each of the time you see a new patient, that's just, it takes 1 hour. It's hard to build the rapport within 1 hour to ask the questions. And one, I remember one of the story you told me how drastically different and the assessment. And based on, you know, when the mother bring a teenager boy, and so using Clinicom and using the traditional the way to assess are coming out a completely different result. And so that's matter are so critical to saving life. Could you elaborate, you know, kind of tell our audience that story? I thought that was so vivid and gave people kind of idea how the subjective objective kind of data collection are so critical.
Yeah, this case really illustrates the value of Clinicom. Briefly, this patient is 15 years old, extremely shy. He has what we call social phobia. So he couldn't even, on telehealth, he couldn't even be on the camera. He was trying to hide on one side or the other. You know, he wouldn't even be able to talk to you straight. If we would have had that patient in the office, I'm sure he would not talk to us. He would be, shut down completely. But the mom did Clinicom, and he did his part of Clinicom, which is important because Clinicom can be used by the third party, like this mother, the grandmother, or whoever owned the child, starting from 5 years of age, or the patient themselves. So adolescents can do their own piece, okay? And the parents can do their own piece. So in this case, I talked to the mother first. I looked at her Clinicom, and she was worried that he was depressed because he was not talking to people. He was in his room all the time. She felt that he was less and interacting less and less and less with other people and with the family. So bottom line was that she saw him as a depressed teenager, okay? never said a word about him trying to commit suicide or having psychotic episodes or hallucinations. Absolutely none of it. When we looked at the clinicum that the patient completed, and now I can make a parenthesis, because for a lot of the young people, and especially teenagers and even young teenagers, the screen is where they connect well. For instance, a lot of kids can play video games and talk to other people, you know, playing that video game, but you want to talk to them and, you know, they will shrug their shoulders, or it's not something that they are very familiar, believe me, you know. They smile more at the camera or the screen than at the other people. So this young man completed his clinicum in a really very elaborate way, so elaborate that the mother was shocked, I was shocked, because he was reporting that he had attempted to commit suicide several times. The mother started crying. She said that there was family history of schizophrenia in the family. And that was shocking, because if I had listened only to the mother, if this kid didn't have the opportunity to use clinicum, we would have never known what was going on. That's the bottom line, really.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Handel. That's a great story. And so I'm also when we talk about clinicum really kind of eliminating misdiagnosis, I remember we were talking about what is the typical, I guess, particularly in the young generation or young age group of a population, you know, have social anxiety, ADHDs, and bipolar. So often people, patients come to you saying, you know, I cannot sleep. So how clinicum actually could objectively diagnose and avoid to misdiagnose, you know, subscribe a sleeping pill. So can you elaborate on that one?
Thank you. That's another extremely good question, Shuni. So for instance, a patient can come in and say, all right, I have problems sleeping, like you were saying. And then if I am, you know, just a regular psychiatrist without clinicum, I would say, okay, we will look for depression, anxiety, a sleep disorder, you know, restless leg syndrome, all these things. But if you have clinicum and the patient says that they cannot sleep, and then they put there that they have nightmares, and the nightmares are associated, let's say, with some traumatic event that happened, and you look at the PTSD symptomatology on clinicum, they may have PTSD because of a trauma that they didn't want to tell anybody else. You know, but they feel a little more comfortable to do it on clinicum. Or they may have bipolar disorder, you know, and they don't sleep because they have bipolar disorder. And clinicum asks all the questions for bipolar disorder. It takes 8 years for an average patient with bipolar disorder to be diagnosed. That's unfortunate. It's just mind-boggling. And so the value of clinicum is, I'll give you another example. Let's say a patient comes, middle-aged woman comes with problems of sleep and problems of anxiety, okay? And then they do clinicum and they meet criteria for ADHD, never diagnosed before. And we did a clinicum study looking at the data, you know, and 67% of women who have ADHD have insomnia associated with ADHD and nothing else. You know, we really didn't know much about innate insomnia associated with ADHD. So because of clinicum, I can say, you know, you have symptoms of inattention that are severe. Has anybody talked to you about it? And then they start thinking, oh yeah, and I felt, you know, I had to quit college and, you know, I have relationship problems because of my attention problems. I was fired 3 times in the past, whatever, 7 years. If you don't treat the ADHD that this patient didn't come complaining about, okay, this is not gonna get fixed. And if you don't have clinicum, you will not find out.
That's excellent examples. So this is actually lead me to the one last question, because we do want to open the floor for audience to ask the questions. So you told me ClinCon used to receive average 12 or 15 calls for new patients per day. But after the pandemic, now you kind of tripled the call you received, 35 calls for new patients per day. So how are your patients affected by pandemic? What are the age group affected the most? And do you have any tips how to overcome stress and anxiety during this challenging time?
So that's absolutely true. And, you know, the levels of anxiety and depression tripled with the pandemic. You know, this is data that is published. And we have seen it. We have seen it in our clinic, in research. So the problem with the pandemic is that people were isolated. That's the number one problem. They were lonely, and loneliness and hopelessness, those two things are the main contributing factors for suicide, okay? So it's a perfect scenario. So you're lonely, you cannot talk to your family in person, or you know, your extended family or your friends, right? And you are hopeless because you don't know when the pandemic is going to end. What's going to happen? I'm talking about several months ago, right? But, you know, I have family in Spain and they still don't know how things will, you know, end. And so they still feel hopeless. So hopelessness and loneliness, those are the contributing factors for suicide. But those are the factors that increase anxiety and depression and psychosis too. So, you know, we have 800,000 deaths due to suicide around the world, you know, and Sam was talking about that a moment ago. So the statistics are absolutely crazy, you know, and if you think about it, at least in the US, one in five Americans have problems with mental health, but that number is now higher. You know, and so in the age group of 15 to 29, suicide is the second leading cause of death, 15 to 29. So what happens with 15 to 29-year-olds? You know, they are starting to get out of the house, social, becoming social with big groups first when they're 15, and then, you know, they start having girlfriends and relationships, and all that was almost cut off, you know, so they cannot do what intrinsically they are supposed to be doing, which is go to the world, check it out, get some relationships out there, okay? Cannot do, okay? That affected that age group tremendously. I think it's probably the most affected age group, okay? The second group that was tremendously affected are moms who are, you know, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, because they have to take care of the kids. They have to work probably remotely. I have so many nurses that are my patients, and one of them was living in a hotel because she didn't want to go to the hospital, work, and then bring COVID to their children at home. Women were tremendously affected. I feel extremely bad because, you know, to go to work, they need childcare, and there was no childcare. They couldn't leave their children with the grandparents. It was absolutely devastating, and still is in many parts of the world, you know. So I think those are the two age groups that are mostly affected. But I don't want to say that those are the only groups that were affected, but the groups that were mostly affected.
Thank you, Dr. Handel. Let me just kind of give it back to Sam and Bridget. I know we kind of start seeing so many questions. I want to make sure our audience get the opportunity to answer some of their questions. Sam and Bridget, take that over.
Thank you so much for such a very interesting discussion, Shuni and Dr. Handel. We do have some exciting questions that we would love to ask you, Dr. Handel. There are a mixture of, there are some questions about Clinicom. There are also some questions about mental health And then there are some questions close to people's heart about people's family. So I will start with the Clinicom ones. So number one, are there any other digital assessment tools similar to Clinicom's? And if so, what sets Clinicom's technology or Clinicom's digital assessment tool apart?
Okay, I think there are some, but they are very limited to certain conditions, you know? So therefore depression and anxiety, or they may be for quality of life. What sets Clinicom apart is that in one setting, you can assess more than 55 psychiatric conditions one time, one sitting one time. And that is the big difference that Clinicom offers. The other difference is, for instance, there is a suicide assessment online, but to do a very thorough suicide assessment, it's so important to see, you know, you remember Hemingway, and Hemingway, you know, he committed suicide, his dad committed suicide, his sister committed suicide. Well, the risk increases if there is this level of suicide in your family. Clinicom asks that question. If you have more than two or three or four psychiatric conditions, your risk of suicide increases. So as Clinicom is assessing the number of psychiatric conditions, you know, it's putting more weight on your risk. If you drink alcohol, you know, or use drugs, your risk is much higher. So those are the things, this biopsychosocial component of Clinicom in putting the weights on the suicide risk items, that's what makes Clinicom completely different, among other things.
Right. No, that's sounds so impressive. Thank you so much. So the second question I'll do on Clinicom, and then Sam can move on and ask you about mental health questions. The second one is, and you spoke about this in your discussion with Shuni, what were the biggest challenges in developing and choosing the right questions to include in the diagnostics tool?
That was the most difficult part, honestly. Okay, for instance, if developing questions is an art, after doing this for so many years, I realized it's not so simple, you know, to just ask a question. Even as a psychiatrist, you sort of polish your way in terms of asking questions. You know, do I ask an open-ended question or do I ask a direct question? You have to know exactly how to ask questions. So to do it in a digital way, in a digital format, brings all these challenges, okay? So definitely asking questions the right way were very difficult. You have to think also, this needs 8th grade level kind of questions. But are you formulating the question in a way that really looks for the answer that you're looking at, not other answers? Okay, I can give you some examples of that, but we really don't have too much time. On the other hand, the other issue with the developing questions is when you're expecting the patient to answer a question, and you have two or three or four possibilities. Okay, they have to be clearly different. You know, they cannot be like in a test, they can be sort of the same and there's one correct answer. You can't do that with these questions. They have to be clearly different. And, you know, just with experience and patients telling you, oh, I didn't understand, that's how you learn to, you know, polish those questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Handel. We have a couple questions here to ask about mental health. The first one is, do you have any advice for how to reassure members of the mental health care community to help them prepare to help so many patients in this coming summer and fall?
How to prepare for the summer and fall in the U.S. or globally?
Yeah, I believe so. It's yes, the U.S.
So we have two types of patients. The patients who prefer to, you know, do it online on telehealth, and patients who are absolutely dying to see you again. Okay. And these are not patients who, the patients who want to come in are not only patients who saw you before. These are patients who you've never seen. I saw a patient for the first time yesterday that I have never seen in person. Okay. And I have been treating that patient for 8 months. And they were so glad to see you, you know, because we need human connection. I mean, I came to the conclusion that it's so important to see these patients live, okay? On the other hand, it's important to give them the option of doing telehealth because they may live far away, they may be very, very scared to drive. You know, there are so many points. So the best advice I can give to other clinicians is, as long as you can, because of the insurance issues, let your patients choose if they want to do telehealth or if they want to do in person. Let them choose. I would say that's the most important thing I can say.
Thank you. You know, it's very important. A lot of what we do, CSOF comes back to patients' interest. It sounds like that's exactly what you're describing, is doing what's best for the patient. Yeah. Just one other question, then I'll leave it to Bridget to ask the last ones about family. But one question that was pretty interesting is, I'd like your insight on, is, do you have any tips maybe for overcoming like a lack of motivation during the pandemic, or what would you say to that?
So lack of motivation can be, the cause can be that, you know, you don't have maybe full blown depression, but lack of motivation can be one of the symptoms. You know, lack of interest, lack of motivation, lack of drive, and other symptoms associated with energy, you know. So I see depression as your energy is going, it's just going down, you know, because you use your brain too much, I guess. And then, so you don't have enough energy. And that can lead to lack of motivation. So motivation can greatly improve if we eat right, if we exercise, if we are outside, you know, and if we socialize. So if you don't have motivation, call a friend, just to call and see, okay, how they're doing, what they're doing. Try to get, you know, like a morning coffee like we're doing today. I'm sure everybody's more motivated today than they were after the talk than before the talk. Connecting with people, you know, we're social beings. I think that's one big lesson from the pandemic. So I have, for instance, three very good friends. And you know, we see each other very seldom. And my wife has three or four very good friends. And what we have seen is that her friends get together more often than my friends. Our common friends, kind of like, we don't see each other too much anymore. So I think taking a step to activate your human connections, let's say, is the absolutely most important thing you can do to improve your motivation, along with going outside, getting sun, seeing nature, eating right. I became a vegetarian 2 years ago. But it's too hard, but you know, it's a good way to start.
Right. It's so true to keep those connections for sure. So there is one from family that I will ask, what can parents do to monitor and improve the mental health of their teenagers?
Okay. So the most important thing a parent can do to improve the mental health of their teenagers is to listen. If your teenager wants to talk to you, okay, they need to feel that you're listening, okay, because they need to develop trust and they need to develop a firm relationship with the parent. Naturally, you know, by nature, teenagers devalue their parents because they're getting ready to exit the home. So you're not that good, you don't know, what do you know? You know, all these things that are associated with teenagers. We have done the same thing. I have done that. I have four sons, they all did the same thing. But if I'm ready to listen to whatever they want to talk about, I'm not going to judge them, and I'm going to be advising them if they want to. You know, I think that's the best advice I can give to parents to deal with their teenagers. I have seen so many parents who are extremely judgmental of their kids. You know, one thing is to be judgmental, that is associated with being authoritarian, right? And the other is to be open and authoritative, you know, which is different. And so that level of connection with your teenagers is so important, because from their own inertia, they are trying to exit the house, right? You're not good, so devalue you. I'm going with my friends. On the other hand, you have to, as a parent, have this very delicate balance between the independence that these teenagers want versus safety. So you have to find that balance between both.
That's amazing comment, Dr. Handel. So I have a teenager boy, by the way. being able to listen to them and listen carefully and balance that. That's so important. So I just want to ask the one last thing. So I know ClinCon, you know, the mental health is such a global, has such a global impact. And I know you just released the version 8 of ClinCon in English, and you're working on multiple other languages. We know many of the audience are coming from outside the United States. So what are the other languages you're currently working on, and how soon we can see that released to the market?
So version 7 already was translated in Italian, Spanish, Chinese, and Portuguese. And so we have to work very hard to make that available in version 8. And we want to translate it in as many languages as possible. We have the University of Alabama helping us with some of that. And, you know, that's why I admire you, Shuni. This is amazing what you do. People don't understand how hard it must have been to be able to translate in as many languages as possible, whatever, you know, let's say a research program wants to do the same research in Beijing and in Holland, you know, no problem. You know, my goal is that I wish every possible thing we can do to translate in as many languages as possible. Next year, we will have probably 10 languages, but you're the expert on that. So I'll have to talk to you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Handel. I think, you know, we're also inspired how you want to bring this technology worldwide, saving life. Thank you so much. And going back to Bridget and Sam.
Thank you very much, Shani and Dr. Handel. Unfortunately, I think those are all the time that we have for questions. On behalf of CSoft Health Sciences, we sincerely thank you, Dr. Handel and Shani, for this fascinating, insightful discussion on mental health, as well as some of the resources available for people just to get help.
So true. And if you love this podcast episode, tune in to our next one on June 24th at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. On medical affairs with a special focus on collaboration without borders, the same theme as our upcoming DIA Global Annual Meeting held from June 27th to July 1st.
So for wherever you are, whether it's morning or night, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you all have a good day wherever you are. Yeah, we'll hope to see you next time.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you, Dr. Handel. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
If you're interested in more information about CSoft Health Sciences, visit lifesciences.csoftintl.com.